Morris even told me my mic was on, and I still did it. Welcome to MGO Radio 3.7. We are, of course, live at the Bow Store. Occasionally, people come and talk to us. It's always very awkward because there aren't any chairs. But if you like looking at people and standing up, you could come here and buy some fine merchandise.
Shop around, get a raincoat.
That's Seth, by the way. Ace is laid up after some... his doctor appears to have gone about as well as the Penn State game.
Yeah.
That's not libel because I didn't name him. I can say I don't know who he is.
I'm not an attorney. I just play one on the internet sometimes.
Do you? All right.
Just on Twitter.
Before we're going to do this again where we're just talking really slowly about the sponsors, aren't we?
Yeah.
Before we start talking about that football game that happened, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So I have looked at it. I looked at all of the things.
Okay. I honestly didn't finish. I was just getting to the end of your defense of UFR.
Yeah. So. Well, it was... some UFRs are harder to do than others. This one was a little bit... Not like it's hard. It's just like, I don't want to do this. And I procrastinated. That's kind of why you might have noticed that the UFRs got up a little bit later than they do in the week. And it's because, oh, God, what was that?
Did it feel a little different to like be looking forward to the offense more than the defense?
It did. It was weird. So I guess we'll start with the defense. They definitely got, and I mentioned this in the UFR. I thought the game plan that Penn State had was really good because it minimized the impact of the defensive line. It confused the hell out of the linebackers. It ignored the cornerbacks and it attacked the safeties, and it worked. As anyone, who watched that game knows, But I don't know if I have like a huge problem with Don Brown's approach.
No,
so it was, there's a lot of people in the aftermath who were like, and I was just like, I don't know.
Are you complaining about Don Brown? Is that I don't think this was a Don Brown game. It was more of a players just didn't play as well as they normally play game.
Well, partially that Trace McSorley was a total buzzsaw. So you've got like four deep shots. I'm not really sure what Michigan can really do about three of them. And the fourth is
one of them was just inch perfect, like 40 yards downfield.
And the fourth is at Cannell, and Cannell does have an opportunity to make a play on that ball and doesn't. So,
is there a version of this game that Michigan loses 28 points?
You don't have Rashawn Gary getting way out of his gap real early. You don't have Chase Winovich get that late hit call on what was going to be like third and a million. You don't have Mike McCray cover Saquon Barkley ever. you have a version of this game that is not a humiliating 42 point game, but something more in the 25 to 32 range.
No, but I mean, it felt like a 42 game. It didn't feel like Penn State left a lot of points on the board, or that we got away with a cut with not one but two Barkley versus McCray plays. One where he dropped it, another where he kind of like he had the edge. He was gonna go all the way, and he just fell down out of nowhere.
Yeah, that is the one thing I'm totally on board with. If anyone has a pitchfork out, like the Mike McCray versus a running back thing, has got to stop. Like. I know Devin Bush is a really great blitzer, but I would much rather have McCray blitzing and Bush out there, or even Hudson. Like you have Hudson for a reason, and I think you should be using his athleticism in that situation instead of sending him across the line of scrimmage. I mean, you can do it a little bit, but...
Yeah, I mean, Brown doesn't want to become predictable, but in this case, you have... Do that most of the time so that it's not... You know, it's a surprise once in a while.
I don't really think that having a... Hudson instead of McCray over a slot receiver, which Saquon Barkley was on his long touchdown, mm-hmm. makes you more predictable. I just think it's a more sensible deployment of your personnel. Yeah, man. Because, like, the weirdest thing about that is, like, okay, if it's not Hudson, why isn't it Bush? Why is it Mike McCray who gets stuck out there? I don't get it. I feel like Bush is very good at it either. He got hit on it in the Michigan State game, but they got to stop doing that. Just
yeah. No. Well, I mean, their game plan against Barkley seemed to be, we're going to play Barkley like any other running back.
What?
I mean, they freaked out about him in the zone read game, but as far as when he goes out into a pass, that's why you have McCray following him out there. There's no switching involved. And when you watch other teams when they play Penn State, that's what they do. They go, oh, that guy is a hugely dangerous receiver. Let's put a defensive back kind of person on him, and they switch. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other systematic thing that I thought might be a valid complaint is that they had some really deep safeties a lot. And, like, I don't know if that's something you can get away with in modern football. Just because the RPO stuff, like, okay, are the linebackers not going to react to Saquon Barkley? I think that's physically impossible to not step toward the sideline when not only is there a play fake, but the line is blocking. And then if you have a safety starting at 15 yards, that slant is wide, wide open, and it will be wide open forever. So, I mean, I know that Don Brown hates quarters, but there's something between, like, quarters and having a guy at 15 yards. That was a little bit reminiscent of that Ohio State game that DJ Durkin did, where he's just got a safety who has absolutely no connection to the rest of the defense.
Yeah, I know there was at least one play, too, because Dewar was making the same comment that he made against Ohio State, you know, when he does, when he clips those plays afterwards on Twitter, and there was one where it was almost a one-for-one example of the same thing that happened against Ohio State.
Well, this was not nearly as much of a tactical debacle as the Ohio State game, with the exception of the McCray stuff. Like, when they managed to get chunk yards, it was usually through a mistake, and it is a mistake that you don't expect, really. So, like, do you expect Rashawn Gary to fly upfield on a 2nd and 4? Not really. Do you expect Brian Monet to get blown out by a single block? Not really.
No.
So if these are bad players who have made bad plays and you're relying on them to get assignments that are difficult for them to do done, then I think you can start, like, getting after the coaching. And that's the McCray thing. But expecting Michigan's defensive line to at least hold up and not get blown out so that if they don't make a tackle in the backfield, that's fine. But, like, you actually have to tackle as the guy passes you instead of getting blown out of the hole. So,
are there any disasters in this game that have been, other than the McCray thing, is there anything that's been carrying over from other games or that we have to worry about for the rest of the year? Or is this, can we dump this in a, you know, Bush never gets a 2.8 minus 8 game? And,
well, I mean, the
2.5, yeah.
There's Rutgers is next on the schedule. We have Max Bortenschlager. We have some other team. Well, who's the other bad team that's coming up here?
Minnesota.
Minnesota, who has no passing game whatsoever. Like, is anyone going to be able to replicate that? No. Is Wisconsin going to do the same thing? No. And then you get to the Ohio State game, and they might have found some things that they might want to go after if Michigan doesn't change their approach. Especially the RPO stuff. That's what I think. On the offensive side of the ball, I mean, I was less depressed than I thought I would be.
I mean, a lot of the things that you pointed out in your UFR were things that I kind of saw live, that one guy thing. Because we were watching, Ace and I couldn't really, there was this TV right above us, so we couldn't really watch the game like you normally can from the press box, where you can kind of back out and watch it. It was right on top of us. We just had to watch it, so we were kind of watching on Wenu most of the time, and watching him make a great block, and then wonder why the running back wasn't running behind him.
Well, it was never, like, the same guy. You know, you had Mason Cole on the first play. You had both fullbacks in the first couple snaps. You had Karen Higdon ignore a pretty obvious running lane. You had Ty Wheatley misidentify who he was supposed to block, and each of those aren't like blocks that get beat. They're just blocks that aren't being made. Well, to the Cole one was a block being beat, but not one that ever should have found them. They shouldn't have ever found themselves in that situation.
And not characteristic of Cole.
No.
Usually, yeah.
But every time it looked like they were going to get a nice chunk, something would go very badly wrong, not slightly wrong. And so you'd get a play where the net blocking is pretty positive and there's a minus two and they get 0 yards. And so my metric was at 68%. We're aiming for 66%, and 68% was also the score in the Michigan State game. And that brings us back to the other major problem with the rushing offense, and that is nobody cares about Michigan's passing offense.
And why would they?
So everybody has safeties at 10 yards, at 8 yards, and they're making tackles at 2 yards and 3 yards downfield. That's not a problem with the run blocking. That's a problem with the pass game, and if you had a functional passing game, I think this would actually be maturing into a pretty good rushing offense.
Yeah, I mean, the passing game doesn't have to be great. It just has to be good enough that when you block a play well, the running back gets through the hole. Where he meets that safety has everything to do with how much that safety is respecting the pass. And if he's at 2 yards,
yeah,
then there's no room to juke him. There's really nothing you can you can maybe go over him, and that's it.
Yeah, and I think there was an instructive example. They had that like orbit motion from Eddie McDoom where they threw the screen on it once, and then they had pin and pulls the other way,
right,
the details of which are not not salient for a radio show. But on the first one, the Penn State safety didn't know what he was looking at, had his eyes over at McDoom, and kind of stayed there for a second or two before reading.
As one does when McDoom is running.
Before reading where the ball was going, and then he read where the ball was going, and he got there, but he got there after 9 yards. The second time they ran that play, there was no such confusion, and he had absolutely no respect for the idea that it might be a pass. So as soon as Michigan gives it to Evans, he's flying downfield, and he makes contact at like 2 yards and really helps stuff that play up. So I mean, on the one hand, it's bad that Michigan can't run for yards, but on the other hand, like the fire trip Tim Drevno stuff that people were kind of grumbling about earlier this year, I was never like on that bandwagon. I was like tentatively thinking about getting on the bandwagon, and now I feel like the offensive line has made a lot of progress, and I feel like maybe by the end of the year we could be thinking that this is a pretty decent run blocking line. It might already be decent. Might be good by the end of the year.
I mean, a lot of what I'm looking at, I mean, you know, this year's not over, obviously, but I'm looking at what these guys look like next year. So, I mean, if Kugler is not going to get there, he's not going to get there. He's a fifth-year senior, whatever. There's a lot on his plate right now, and you can see Ruiz kind of being ready next year to join Bredesen and Onwenu, and then you have three very large men who are quite talented being able to push people off the ball. And seeing Onwenu, he the only guy who actually really had a good game.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily, I mean, the blocking in general was good. Like, I thought Sean McCune had a great game, mm-hmm, as a blocker. The other guys weren't as prominent, but I don't think anybody had a negative score. And it was pretty close to everybody to the like two-thirds good that we were looking for, except for Cole, because he had that bad play on the first snap. You do bring up Kugler, and I wonder how much of the line's issues are the fact that they changed their center, and Kugler hasn't been on the field yet, and it might be for a reason. I don't know, because I had five team protection minuses, and that's when I can't figure out who's possibly supposed to stop that because of the way the line deploys. And then he had four minuses on him on his own. And
well, you know how like fifth-year senior offensive linemen are never really that plug and play, even if you believe they would be. And like when they try to get a grad transfer, who was that Ohio State guy that?
Well, I mean, he's not a grad transfer though.
No, he's been in different offenses. I mean, this is his third year in Harbaugh's offense, so that doesn't really hold water anymore.
Yeah,
but
I don't think that's...
This is not his fifth year in the offense, and he hasn't been starting before, and He did. I don't know if he spent how much time he spent at guard when he was trying to win the guard spot before, but it.
I just wonder because like there are issues that I can't put a finger on because it just seems like something's broken, and that goes back to the line call, and that goes back to quarterback, it goes back to Kugler, it goes back to maybe Cole, who might be in all these things. It just feels like sometimes they're just not polished enough, and it's getting better, except the pass protection, which is getting worse. And then John O'Korn,
better,
still not good. There was a lot of talk about the amount of pressure Michigan gave up, and they did give up a lot of pressure. But about half of the pressure events, it felt like John O'Korn had a hand in them. And it was – you saw McSorley be able to get the ball out when he got a lot of pressure, and O'Korn often did not. So,
and there's the throw when you're facing pressure and there's and you have a good receiver lined up one-on-one with a cornerback who's up there with him. The throw is to just throw it. And there was a lot of clucking online about – that third and long where everyone's got man coverage.
Third and six, so third not even that long.
Yeah, but people are upset because the routes were going long. I can't really tell if the routes were supposed to be cut off against man coverage or not, but you have if you have something in your face and you have Crawford, that's what you're supposed to get.
You could have taken a shot at Crawford. You could have taken a shot at People Jones, who was coming back. Because he's got, you know, a step or two, and he can box his guy out, and he's 30 yards downfield, so you can definitely throw that guy open. And I put a screenshot on the blog of both these guys who are on deep routes are already in their breaks. And you, on a shot that deep, you don't want to have the ball in your hand after someone started to break. That's not, you've already kind of missed your window. But even then, he has an opportunity to like, all right, I'm just going to throw this ball, because it's third and six. It's the end of the third quarter, I believe, and you're down two touchdowns. I mean, you got to take a shot. And he's a fifth-year senior. I don't expect this to get a ton better. He did have some moments in this game. He had a number of nice shots where he was given protection and he was able just to stand and survey and find a guy. I think that happened maybe half the time he was given the opportunity. They took advantage of it, which is an improvement.
Yeah. That Indiana play is going to be stuck in my memory for a very long time just because it was so set up and so open and so two men in the route.
But he
is not going to screw that up.
He hit the two-man route to Peoples-Jones in this game, so you do see him making some progress.
Right, but I mean, anyone's supposed to be able to hit a two-man. Can he get the three reads?
No.
Okay.
I mean, the hope is that the running game comes along enough that if you have these two-man routes and play action, you suck guys up on first down, and you can make them respect the passing game, even though it's a relatively minor component of what you do. That is the goal.
The Spade stuff was coming out from today. When it was parents talking about Purdue, and that kind of brought Spade back up again. Especially because there's a possibility that he'll be ready later this year. I mean, I remember when right before that happened, Spate was kind of falling apart too. But is that a significant upgrade now? I mean, are we? Is that something to hope for?
I think that's what Michigan would go with. I mean, he was a starting quarterback, and John O'Korn has not Wally pipped anybody here, so I think you'd probably go back to him. But who knows? That's up to Jim Harbaugh, and he's got a lot more information than we do because he sees practice.
Yeah.
I think we have enough information. I feel fairly confident in my projections of the future
but
of
there's no
passing game.
But we're not sitting here thinking, God, if Wilton Spade comes back for Ohio State, we're saved.
No, because the pass protection's bad, and the receivers are bad. And
right.
You know, it's
right.
It's just they're bad. It's fine. Yeah. I was hoping that they would be more. I was even maybe expecting more, but people get mad at me because I make a prediction, and then I'm like, well, you know, it's okay that they're bad. But I'm like, but you thought they were going to be better, and I was like, uh-huh. Sometimes I'm wrong. And when I see the things that are happening, I'm like, well, there's a pretty good reason for that. And losing Tariq Black, not having Newsom, not having Spate, you know, they're bad. It happens. So let's never talk about this game again. It's over.
Forgotten.
It's over. It's forgotten. Well, I mean,
I know a lot of Penn State fans. This is not going to be forgotten for a while, but I can still bring up the fact that we beat them by more last year. So
I don't actually know any people who. I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't know any people. Let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk to John U. Bacon. Speaking of debacles.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
An operation with a focus is a flush to the mind and a prompt diagnosis too. At the end they found a blind spot, call a whiteout, a washout, a distorted point of view. But hey, let's find a way to be. Hey, let's find a way to be.
Alright, that's a 3 or 4 on the rave scale.
That was Antidote by the A-plus Machines.
We have, we have to have like, copyright-free music or like free music that you can use on YouTube.
So these are nothing I've heard of, in other words.
Right, yeah. So yeah. I've never heard of any of these songs. And the first one was like, man, we're at a rave. and nothing has come close to that. That's John U. Bacon, by the way. How you doing, John?
Greetings, Brian. How's your cold treating you? One-year-old kid at home?
He just oozes.
Wait till you go to daycare. That's an incubator, man.
Yeah. I mean,
whatever anyone's got, you got by Friday.
The whole town just collects all the diseases and throws them back out at you.
He doesn't go to daycare, but he goes to these like... like playgroup things.
And same stuff.
With all the
biologically, little, same thing.
I mean, it's probably good because he needs to like have his immune system like get some practice reps in, right? You know?
That's the exhibition season, pre-conference, you're right.
I mean, we have a pear tree in the backyard and some pears fell off of it and just he's eating one off the ground and I was like, that's probably fine. But that's why he's oozing so much and that and he transmits some of that to me.
Have you guys gone through stomach flu yet?
No, shut up, John. That didn't take very long.
I tell you, shut up, John. That was who timed that one, by the way? My 1.5-year-old kid is like the world's smallest frat pledge, basically. He's okay. Just sitting there looking at me, puking in a bucket. That was awesome.
Anyway.
and then my wife was.
I feel like we're still talking about the Penn State games.
Yeah. Speaking of great Halifax explosions.
There's our segue into the next thing. So you just warming you up for the next one.
You have that your NPR gig, right?
Yes.
Like so you do an article, is it weekly for them?
Yeah. When I took 3 or 4 months off because of Halifax and Saunders.
Right.
But yeah, that's pretty much every Friday.
And then you record those for.
And then
the radio.
We do an interview with Cindy Canty on Mondays. Okay. About 5 minutes. Then I do the commentary on Fridays. Mm-hmm. And then I'm on NPR about once every month or two, the national one, either Here and Now or the Morning Edition.
Do you get like heat from your NPR gig?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like blowback?
Yeah.
Sure. I get a lot less now than I got initially. Whenever you have a new voice in NPR, it's like, who the hell are you?
Oh, just from people who, like, don't like you. Well, I can't believe anyone would not like John Ubaker.
Have you met Dave Brandon?
What, did someone time that the first? I had the under.
Not very little, but you... certain topics, obviously. Most of my topics, I mean, for example, for NPR, I do things like the madness of travel team for 5-year-old kids. Like, what are we doing? It's nuts. And
yeah.
Who's going to argue against that, basically? Not right. The NPR crowd, I'll tell you that. So
no, so, but like, did you talk about like the actual Penn State game much, or is it?
Oh, this Friday I did. For my thing was, look, the team, your analysis strikes me as sound.
Okay.
As you said, the offense was better and still not very good. That's about what I said in my thing, is that, well, wow, they're dramatically improved and still below average. So how about that? But my follow-up point was the fringe of Michigan fans, which you guys deal with, of course, that, you know, this is unacceptable. The three phrases I had were unacceptable, accountability, and, you know, year three can 'em kind of stuff. Mm. It's like, it's adolescent to me. And look, I'm not against Michigan fans. God bless them.
Or adolescence.
I might be in 10 years.
Yeah.
We'll see about that. But the whole idea of, you know, Canham, okay, this is not up to your standards. I get that. I mean, you can't spin what you saw on Saturday. It's not there yet. It's not even close in many ways. But what's your plan B? Okay, so you don't like this. Greg Schiano? I mean, what do you like?
Yeah. Well, I did my TKA today, and some guy called in, and he was like, why don't we throw in a Gentry and do all this stuff? And I was like, well, I'll tell the coaches what your opinion is. Like, why are you telling me this?
Look, and here I'll probably make some more friends, no doubt, but under the Hoke regime, you could fairly second-guess Borges pretty much every game,
yeah,
is my impression. So you may, in fact, have a better idea than he does.
Yeah.
In this case, for the most part, I think Jim's a pretty smart football guy. He's established that. Now, certain things have surprised me. The offensive line has surprised me. The fact that O'Korn does not seem as ready as we had expected him to be. But it's also like, in the same way you want the next coach, they always want, as Jamie says, the most popular guy in the building is the backup quarterback because he has no flaws. He will get every pass right, of course.
Right.
Well, there's probably a reason why the other guy's starting. And Michigan's seeing that now.
Well, but we still want the backup quarterback.
I understand that. And now that, of course, is Peters. So
I just wonder if, like, the people who, like, donate to pledge drives, like, call you up and be like, excuse me, sir, I found your column banal and infuriating. Is that you get, like, a different, like, kind of,
we
like,
do
trash
get a,
talk?
We get a very different kind of trash talk. Yeah. Yes, it'd be refuse talk, I believe.
Refuse talk, yeah.
Refuse
rubbish.
Yes.
Don Brown's defensive game plan was rubbish.
Rubbish repartee. Not trash talk, sir. And I'll thank you to call it rubbish repartee. Yeah, something along those lines. But yeah. Not too much. The main thing we're shooting for there, which is a very different audience. Your audience is hardcore. Obviously, you guys know recruiting. You're deep in the weeds with all this stuff, deep dives. All there we're trying to do is, I don't like sports, but I like this. That's the whole thing we're shooting for. So I'm trying to translate the sports world for people who don't really care that much about sports.
Right.
Why might you care about this? What are the values at play? What are the conflicts? And trying to make it more than just sports, basically.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Margo might listen.
Anyway.
Emdo wife, sorry.
You have a book out.
That's true.
You have many, you have like several books out.
I suppose that's true. This one comes out November 7th. Saunders was out in August, and thanks for your help there.
What did I do?
We had an expert.
Did we?
I think so.
Why?
Yes.
Why? Thank you.
Oh, there's a Michigan part. That's right. I was just like... Now this is a bacon segment. Now we've really got into it.
I'm not sure how much good this stuff really does me, but I still enjoy it anyway.
Oh, it does me no good whatsoever.
It might be a blowback, too. I don't know.
I don't know. No, we made some money off
You did, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So did you.
I did, but not because...
Those books got sold.
Yes, they do. How the book business goes is you have to pay off your advance first.
Okay.
And once you do that, you get royalties. And I usually get like a check for like $5.
Okay.
I've got the knack of going like 2 books past the advance. So thanks.
Yeah, I mean those 2 books.
But you were the smarter one. He's the one who figured out that if you link it somehow to your Amazon.
Amazon has an affiliate program.
An affiliate program, you hopped on board. You and Greg Dooley. I know, made a lot more money on that book for several months than I did.
Okay, yeah, but you got an advance. So
I also wrote the book.
That's true.
So
I mean, I put in some effort. You interviewed me.
I did.
Also, I edited it a little bit.
That's very true. Furthermore, you also provided one of the best scenes in the book.
Well, and I kept yelling at you, like, you got to put this back in. Like, you got all the stuff that was red X'd out, and I was like, ah, that's awesome. And you're like, I don't want to get sued. And I was like, ugh, damn it, Bacon.
Damn lawyers. Newman.
No, you. I was blaming you.
I know you were. I wasn't.
Well.
Ellis Levine was the lawyer on that one. He's a legendary, apparently, literary lawyer out in New York. A lot of big books have gone through him. I got another guy personally. I never met him until about 6 months ago or so.
Sounds like a good situation for a lawyer.
Yeah, how about that? But, man, some of those pages, we went over 5, 10 times. It was just, I mean, yeah. I was talking to that guy every day for a month and a half. So I have to confess that some of the best stuff that you saw and the other readers did in fact hit the floor. And it'll remain there until the statute of limitations passes, which is getting pretty close, I think.
Well.
There's some juicy stuff we had to cut. However, there's plenty of juice in that book. Plenty of juice in the next book, which reminds me.
Oh, yes. We should talk about your upcoming book, The Great Halifax Explosion.
Yes.
By John U. Bacon, New York Times bestselling author.
That's what it says there on the book. And then, even more.
Oh, my God. A World War I story of treachery. Treachery.
Treachery.
I do this for kind of a living. A World War I story of treachery, tragedy, and extraordinary heroism.
And one of the great heroes happens to be Michigan's first hockey coach.
Really?
Out of 100,000 words in this book, about 20,000 go to Joseph Ernest Bars.
Joseph
Ernest Bars. Who's on a pillar right down there at Yost. Without him, there would be no hockey at Michigan.
So
this will be the excerpt that will run on MGO blog very
soon. Spoiler
alert,
by the way, because you read most of this book not knowing who this guy is, and then all of a sudden it hits you at the very end, like, oh, by the way, he starts in Michigan's hockey program.
And in a kind of in a heroic manner, too. But anyway, his story in a nutshell. One of the cool things about the book about the research that I discovered is U.S. and Canada were not allies before 1917. We were flat-out enemies. 1776, most of Canada is populated by former American colonists, about 60,000 who go north to New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. Half my family, the Bacons, stayed in New York. The other half, the Hughes, went up to Canada. Joseph Barr's family is one of them. His great-great-grandfather was a privateer against the Americans in 1776. A privateer is a pirate funded by the government.
We all know what privateers are.
Do we?
We're dorks.
Okay, touche. There you go. Like, but even better.
I can't tell you how many games I've played where I'm like, ooh, I get to be a privateer.
There are dorks and then there's privateers, I guess.
Well,
right?
Yeah. So.
But his great-grandfather is the greatest privateer in Canadian history. During the War of 1812, he captured, burned, or sank some 80 American ships. He was the most wanted man in America. His name's on, his face is on posters and so on. They finally captured him in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And ran him up and down the street for a couple months and fed him hardtack and whatnot. And they released him only on the idea that he would not attack again, and he didn't. But the Barrs family was not too fond of Americans. And during even the Civil War, Canada was helping out the Confederates as much as they were the Union side. They wanted the cotton.
What?
So, yeah. The neighborhood that gets exploded in Halifax is called Richmond, named for Richmond, Virginia, because of the cotton. A high school in Halifax named in 1992 is the CSS Confederate ship Tallahassee.
What?
I'm not kidding you. So we were not allies in 1911. The Speaker of the House in the U.S., a guy from Missouri, the Paul Ryan of his day, gets on the floor of the U.S. Congress and loudly, very clearly argues for the annexation of Canada, and he is met with cheers, and the Washington Post gushes about his statement. So we are not allies. It's crazy.
Well, until we annexed them, and then...
it never actually happened.
Well...
Ish.
Yet.
Dave Barry called Canada technically a nation. That was the motto there. So anyway, so Joseph Bars grows up in Nova Scotia. His dad's a pastor and then runs a grocery store. He graduates from college summa cum laude at age 19. Brainiac plays hockey for Acadia University, which his great-grandfather had founded. Becomes a very successful guy for Imperial Oil in Montreal, making good money. And leading a very active lifestyle, according to his letters, with three or four girlfriends juggling at once, including a French woman whose dad told him to get lost. Goes to World War One, signs up eagerly because he wants to fight the Hun and all that. And at first he's all...
His words, not yours.
His word. Well, back then, are you kidding me?
Let's not throw around like...
No, that is a quote, people, in case we have any PC Germans from four generations
fight
ago.
Fight the
now.
Kaiser.
The Kaiser, okay. And at first, it's like Vietnam. At first, he's all gung-ho about it, and his letters are great, as I believe Seth will back up. The guy could write.
Yeah. And that's why I thought, because he's focused on so much in the book, and I'm like, oh, I guess this guy was the best writer.
This is the
writer.
Hockey coach guy.
Yeah, eventually. Seth, you're about to ruin it for Seth. Seth's got 50 pages left. He doesn't know that yet.
But, oh, you ruined it for me right before we started recording here.
Okay,
but like,
good.
But I was wondering why you're focusing on this guy, and my conclusion was that he must have written really nice letters, because you quote his letters so often, and I'm like... This guy was probably a good writer. That's why
that's
using
the main
him
reason.
As the narrator.
Honestly, when I picked him up and I learned about him in 99 doing Blue Eyes and talked to his son actually about him, I thought there's no way in hell this guy's my main character in this book. But his letters are so damn good, and he was everywhere. So we got lucky on that one. So over in World War One, he's gung-ho. And then, man, near the end of his first year, he's saying, I'll take a bullet in the arm. I'll take a bullet in the leg. I want out. This is bad news. Trying to become an officer to get restationed to London and whatnot. He gets hit by a shell on June 2nd of 1916 and is supposed to die. Then when he recovers, supposed to not walk again, comes back to Wolfville, Nova Scotia. The ship blows up. Now, this ship, Mont Blanc, biggest man-made explosion until the A-bomb, one-fifth the power of the A-bomb, and they weren't even trying. It's not atomic. They had no scientist on this.
Right.
6 million pounds of TNT and high explosives on one ship. That's a bad idea. And the reason was the Russians had just overturned the Czars. So now they're out of the Eastern Front. So now the Allies are worried that, okay, Germany's going to walk through France and Great Britain. So these guys are going to overdo it. 6 million pounds of TNT and whatnot. The crew used copper nails to store it because copper does not spark when struck. That's how paranoid they were of one spark sending them up. So that's a bad idea. December 6, 1917, runs into another ship in Halifax. That's a bad idea.
Don't run into another ship.
That's in hindsight. That's a yeah. If they'd known that,
the other ship, you get mad at the other ship, like to this whole, because you know it's coming. So you're like,
the other ship was being a jackass.
Yeah,
really.
He's out of his lane. He's in oncoming traffic.
It's like yes, planning.
How do you do that with a ship?
Keep turning left. The guy is a hothead who once beat up a guy in his cabin for being German. And they chase him down the Delaware coast to finally catch him, actually.
And this guy's like still like...
This guy's a hothead.
Driving a ship.
He's still driving a ship. And he's late.
Just honking at everyone to get out of his way. And the first guy gets out of his way and goes, by the way, there's a ship behind you.
And he doesn't care. And so game of chicken with Mont Blanc. And Mont Blanc knows what it's got. And the Emo does not from Norway. And finally Mont Blanc realizes that we're going to get hit. So they finally veer to the left hard. At the same time, the Emo loses its nerve and also veers to the left. Hits Mont Blanc. The airplane fuel on top, tons of benzol fuel, tips over, ignites, and these guys get in two rowboats, 40 guys, and they get the hell out of there, going the other direction, warning nobody, very sadly, tragically.
So they just were like, we're out. Bye.
We're bon voyage.
They probably imagine that the ship's going to blow up like any second,
exactly.
not several minutes later. Or 20 minutes later, when the ship doesn't
blow up later.
It's weird.
They only have 20 minutes, though, right?
18. And then it's a tick-tock thriller with a heart, is what one of the reviewers said. So the ship is now a ghost ship. No one's on it. It slides perfectly into Pier 6 at the base of Halifax, this new neighborhood, Richmond, working class, at 8:46 in the morning, and does not blow up till 9:04, so everyone walking to school or work stops to watch it. All the stoves are going for breakfast. That'll be a problem once it blows up. At 904.35, it ignites the first mushroom cloud in world history, actually.
Oh, he's showing me a picture. Very visual.
How about podcast. That? Good radio. Look, everybody,
this
at the picture.
This draft cup, cool pictures.
So it's pretty serious stuff. In 1/15 of a second, less time than it takes to blink, half of Halifax is gone. 25,000 homeless, 9,000 wounded, 2,000 killed. Jeez. Almost instantly. It creates a 35-foot tidal wave, which drowns the ones that didn't kill the first time.
Yeah.
And then the fires start everywhere because the stoves.
Yeah.
And now it's burning for about a day and a half. So it's a disaster.
And Michigan hockey guy puts us all out himself.
Incredible he does, by spitting on it.
Spitting on it.
No, his doctor mentor says, we need to go over there. So get on a train, go down to Halifax. And Barr says it's worse than what he saw in World War I, which is horrible to begin with. He said there's not one stick laid upon another in this place. Everything is flattened. The wounds are horrible. All he knows is first aid. But you have 9,000 wounded. So they put him at Camp Hill Hospital. By the end of the weekend, this guy's performing surgeries on no sleep and no training.
And all right, okay. So
that's when he realizes, this is a cool part.
I'm going to write down the World War I veteran.
That's right.
Amateur surgeon.
Amateur surgeon. Three sports star in college, football.
Three sports star in college.
Womanizer.
Hockey and...
Womanizer,
he didn't quite spell that out. But a ladies' man, I would say that, for his time.
Has game.
Highly conservative.
I'm just going to write down has
He has game. By the way, his MO is very clever. When he wants to know how to sing or play the piano or learn French, he finds an attractive woman to teach him. And then he ends up dating her. That's a pretty good MO there. So anyway, so he goes down there. And, of course, he hates the Americans before that. And at the end, Boston sends, within an hour of the explosion, without even being asked, they send two trains, two ships, 100 doctors, 300 nurses, $1 million of supplies.
Yeah.
Again, no one's even asked them at this point, and they were not allies. They sent all that up there. They basically save Halifax. And Halifax, to this day, is so grateful for this that every Christmas, they send them the best spruce tree in the province. They have a whole contest for the best Christmas tree, 50 foot. It cost them $180,000 to send it down to Boston. They will light it on November 30th this year in Boston Common, right by the State House.
On fire?
And no, light it with lights.
Well, I just thought because there was an explosion.
And Boston says thanks, and they have no idea why they're getting this.
They don't?
They don't. Most of them don't.
The people who pick up the tree know what the deal is.
They do, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, $180,000. And
why?
And all of a sudden now the Prime Minister of Canada and Woodrow Wilson are exchanging heartfelt letters in the New York Times and so on. That's the first time that ever happened. So it made us allies, basically.
All right, so
then Barr sees all this, and he decides, I don't want to be an executive in Montreal. I don't want to be a pastor like my dad. I don't want to be a soldier. I want to be a doctor. I want to heal people. And he gunned down as a machine gunner, of course, plenty of the enemy. But
okay, a machine gunner.
Machine gunner,
there.
That's right.
Also, I wrote down ancestral pirate.
I like ancestral. They need to expand that pillar, don't they?
Yeah.
Ancestral pirate. Yeah. His uncle gives him $100. His uncle was rich, living in Rochester, New York, and says, go to the University of Michigan. And we are not quite sure why. He had a cousin here in surgery.
Yeah.
We have no idea why he did it. He came here in 1919. He still had shell shock. He had hand tremors. He couldn't sleep. He couldn't walk because of the left foot being blown up, basically. So he had a cane. But he's determined to learn how to walk again. He made himself skate every day down at the old Coliseum. And then he gets into Michigan's medical school, marries a woman from Battle Creek, walks down to Fielding Yost's office and says, you need a hockey program, because he wanted to keep skating.
Yeah.
To keep walking. And tears were coming down his cheeks when he was skating because it's so painful. But this guy's a tough little bastard. And Yost says, you're right, but only if you're the first coach. And that is why you, sir, again, great radio, are wearing a Michigan hockey jersey. Why? The Halifax explosion. Boom! I did it. I did it, people.
So that's John U. Bacon's latest book. This wasn't as much of a complete disaster as the last one. That's unfortunate. I guess the football team did that for us this weekend.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to talk
about it. The book is the Halifax explosion.
So are you just kind of like booked out now? You're just like,
I'm revved up. I had about a month.
Revved up?
Yeah, yeah. Writing books is hard.
This is weird, man. Like, you wrote a book. Do you know how weird that is to someone like who hasn't ever written a book? It's just like, look at this. It's a book. This guy did it.
By the way, listeners, I can tell you this, that my longtime editor, Thomas Levine, who's thanked again in this book, he's not the official editor, Peter Hubbard is, who did a great job. He did American Sniper. That's his.
Okay.
My editor. So we're looking at Hollywood. We're talking about movie rights, actually.
Really?
Yeah. In L.A. I got meetings set up and all this
stuff. You got meetings in L.A.?
Yep.
Who's playing Joseph Bars?
You are.
How
that's what I was hoping.
How are you going to keep him down on the farm?
That's right, and you didn't, as a matter of fact. But movie rights, Peter Hubbard, Thomas Levine. Levine wants to do a book with you. I've told you this before.
What? I can't write a book.
Levine is the official editor.
Look at how many words this is. It's like 60.
Do you know how many words a day you write?
Yeah, I do. It's different, though.
Then staple them together.
whatever.
Look, what's his name? From Grantland Simmons, for crying out loud.
Simmons wrote a book, yeah.
Yeah. You can write a better one.
Maybe.
We make magazines.
Yeah, that guy was a blogger. That was this thing.
Yeah. Well, he's.
I mean, and his book is not like a narrative arc.
Yeah, but I don't want
to. Not what he's doing.
I don't want to write a sports book like that's. I write like just with my day job, you know.
Well, I can write about the Great Halifax Explosion, but one guy already got there first.
Well, that's a terrible topic now.
That's a terrible topic.
It just already happened.
It's been done.
It's been done.
So yes, you're Michigan hockey fans and all that, and. He loved Michigan, and he's loyal to it. He becomes an American citizen.
Yeah.
And sets up shop in Oak Park, Illinois, home of Ernest Hemingway, and all his kids are Michigan graduates. So,
do you have a next project coming up? Or
sell that thing.
Okay, so you're just
I got
like
a 12-state, 25-stop book tour.
Good God.
Seattle to San Diego, D.C., Philadelphia to Boston, and a bunch of stuff in the middle.
Yeah. That's the other reason not to write a book, by the way.
November 7th at Rackham. Like last time, Tuesday night, November 7th at Rackham, free. Letterati will be there. We'll have hundreds of books. And Cynthia Canty from Michigan Radio, the non-sports side.
Yeah.
We'll be doing that one.
My wife's been on that show a couple times.
I'm not surprised. Your wife is very good at this.
I have never been on it, though.
You could if you wanted to, but why would you? I mean, you seem busy.
I don't know. I'd like to get some, like, high-class trash talk, so.
Ah, some refuge repartee?
Yeah.
By the way, that can get set up next week. If you want that done.
No, I was just. Saying, I don't like if someone wants to ask me, then, but like, I'm not gonna be like, hey, you do me thing good. I talk for you.
I think if you phrase it that way, the odds might go down
or up.
Hey, you, me, thing do radio.
Yeah,
good.
That's good.
Yeah, for the caveman beat, that'd be really good, I think. But
well, you know, I do talk about sports. All right. It was good having you on again.
Good being on. Good catching your cold here on the handshake.
Yeah, well,
I got a kid.
You got a kid.
My immune system is now bulletproof like yours will soon be.
Well, from your lips to God's ears.
There you go. And we have an excerpt coming up next week, an MGO blog. We've not decided when, I don't think.
No.
But
no, we'll get it in. We'll get it in.
We'll get it in.
I got to finish it, too. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm trying to boil down.
Finish it. It's a book.
Dude, excerpts are harder than it looks.
Is it?
Because you have to tell a story in 2,000 words.
Because it looks super easy.
Thank you.
It looks like cutting and pasting something you've already done.
It looks super easy. For yours, it kind of has been. You take a chunk, but even that takes about a day and a half to, because there are always some blanks you got to fill in that the reader won't know, and how to get it down to 2,000 words.
Right.
So in this case, it's very hard, because I want to tell
you
the bar
story. You
don't
have to get it down to 2,000 words. We're not like a newspaper. We don't care. You could put the whole book on the site. We'd be like, that's a long post.
I think they're going to put the first two chapters on Twitter next week, actually. So,
on Twitter?
They've got a way of doing this. You click
they
on
They must
it.
Be 280 characters, people.
Yeah. was
talk about condensing.
Yeah.
Ship shows up. Boom. Bad news.
There's a
Twitter. Hockey. Michigan. Bomb.
Twitter feed that just tweets out Moby Dick. So maybe you could look into that.
Oh, this is Ishmael. Nothing, man. Call me Dr. Bars. That's how it starts.
All right, that's the end of that segment. We're done. All right, we got to take a break. Come back with the Gimme Top 5.
Always a pleasure.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
And handshake deals can beg to not believe you. The emptiness will hold right through if I.
Yeah.
That was Any Given Day by the A-Plus Machines.
That could be on my Kylie to Corn station. Gimmicky top five time. So in recent weeks, teams have lost to Rutgers.
Teams, multiple. It's a plural.
They're on a winning streak, and I very carefully phrased this in the preview. So that I said it was their first winning streak over Big Ten teams, not it's their first winning streak as a Big Ten team. So our gimmicky top five, and this I have a couple of ones that are. Anyway,
are
our gimmicky top five
by the end of this segment
is other things that might take an L from Rutgers.
All right. Well, my
wait.
Oh, okay.
You don't just get to start.
I don't get to do this very often.
You don't just start.
All right.
You gotta wait. Are you waiting?
I'm
okay. I'm gonna pause, and you're not gonna say anything until I do the thing that I need to do. Seth, you're number five.
My number five is the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Wait, what?
They lost 20-7 to Illinois, and Illinois like lost legitimately to Rutgers.
Oh, you're taking this very literally.
I'm starting very literally, okay. And I know that you're a Western Kentucky fan, and now
I'm not really a Western Kentucky fan. I've seen some more of their games than most people who aren't Western Kentucky fans.
Well, because we've talked about it enough on the blog, I started watching them. Well, Brum was kind of
interesting guy.
So now my Western Kentucky fandom, the loss to Illinois, kind of like
it stings,
stifled out whatever little candle of Western Kentucky fandom was growing.
My number five is people who reply to you with GIFs. It's terrible. Like, you're trying to, like, lay some crazy smackdown, and they just, like, have this, like, response GIF to you where they're like, ugh. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, that's, you just picked a GIF. You didn't.
They didn't even, like, download a specific GIF. They just, like, use the auto function.
Right, yeah. They're just, it's, you know, if we're, like, bombing each other on Twitter and you resort to something someone else did, someone else acted out this thing, and instead of, like, replying, you're just like, oh, I'm going to have a GIF of someone doing a jacking off motion. You lose. You lost.
And then a GIF of him dropping the mic because
So you might be in a Twitter bomb war with Rutgers. You reply with a GIF. You lost that.
I
Twitter
bet you
bomb
the
war.
Rutgers official account could defeat the guy with a GIF.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Seth, you're number four.
My number four are the 2017-18 Michigan basketball opponents: North Florida, Central Michigan, Southern Miss, UC Riverside, U of D, University of Detroit, Alabama A&M, and Jacksonville are all below Rutgers on KenPom.
The whole not Power 5 teams.
Yes. Yes, they're all. You want to hear the KenPom ratings for these teams?
No. I mean, you're going to do it anyway, but I don't want to hear them.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
That's what I said.
295, 263, 292, 288, 274, 350, and 312.
350? Are there 350 teams? Evidently.
Evidently. That would be Alabama A&M.
Alabama A&M.
Yes.
Slightly worse than Texas A&M.
So Rutgers is dragging the schedule down, but not as much as Michigan's dragging its own schedule down this year.
All right, my number four are network sitcoms, specifically Young Sheldon, which is like a spinoff of The Big Bang Theory, which I've seen like once, and I almost died while watching it. It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. It was disgusting. It was unfunny. It had Blossom in it.
I didn't realize
that until later. I'm like, was that Blossom? It was.
I didn't realize network sitcoms actually still exist. I figured like any writers have abandoned ship for a Netflix special or
they
whatever.
They do, and then you go to other people's houses and you're like, you're watching television. Like, not like Netflix. You're watching literal television for something other than sports. And then, as bad as this
I don't think I've seen that happen in years.
As bad as this is, then, like, okay, the network sitcom goes to commercial, and you're just sitting there watching commercials. And, you know, we have commercials, but we actually offer something that's unmissable.
Right. And people love our sponsors.
But, like, you're watching commercials to watch Young Sheldon. What are you doing with your lives? You took an L from Rutgers. Seth, you're number three.
My number three, this is going to take some explanation, are the Princeton Groundkeepers.
So, yes, that will take some explanation.
So one of my best friends from high school went to Princeton and talks about Rutgers for years before they joined the conference, just hated Rutgers because it's a very Michigan State situation there without the sports.
With Princeton.
So Princeton is like the intellectual we care about where our rankings are.
We're aware.
And they've got these Rutgers animals on their campus painting things red all the time. And
what?
And it's not really reciprocated. They don't go to Rutgers and they don't play
people
each other.
People from Rutgers go to the Princeton campus and paint things red.
They paint things red. So the first things they did is they stole their cannon. They took Rutgers.
They stole their cannon.
They had a couple cannons there from the Revolutionary War. Princeton was very happy about these. This is where the cannon comes from. Why they
like
have that?
Grand Valley guys showed up on campus and they were like, "Oh, we're gonna paint." Well, I don't even know what the color is.
There were two cannons. One of them was bigger and the other one was smaller. Rutgers guys show up to it, tie a chain around it with their truck. This is like in the 20s. Take off
in the 20s?
In the 1920s, yeah. They take off so fast the truck falls apart.
Well, that
they ripped their car apart and they ran away. So now they have a
comical
stuff painted red and half a truck, and yeah.
So there's like a there's
and it
like
still a, goes on.
Okay, yeah, those yeah you're no I don't know. All right,
the Princeton Groundkeepers have to clean this all up. So like that they're taking the L from Rutgers.
Yeah. My number three is Twitter executives. Just the doofiest bunch of doofs that ever doofed. Banning people and being like, I'm proud of my job and my family. I don't care about your family, Biz Stone. Come get some.
Yeah, I did take this more seriously than you did.
No, I'm dead serious. Jack. At Jack. No, I know some people who work at Twitter, and it's just terrible. Like, they're like, yes, we're sensible, but then you get up to the upper echelons, and these guys are just the doofiest doofs to ever doof. And I can't get off their service, but also I can't get their service to, like, automatically understand that I don't want to talk to anybody, despite talking to people. Well, this might be a hypocritical situation here.
They invented public texting, and they're very important because of that.
Oh, Seth, you're number two.
My number two is a hypothetical third-year head coach, David Cutcliffe's 2017 Michigan Wolverines.
It's taking an L from Rutgers this weekend?
I mean, so many guys graduated.
No.
The program's falling apart. Cutcliffe's kind of...
Duke annihilated Northwestern. Northwestern's better than Rutgers.
Fair enough. All right, how many...
Cut's a good coach.
I think the point was the...
people call him Cut.
Go through the list of people that we could have gotten besides Harbaugh. This is my little dig at everybody.
Cut is not at the bottom of that list.
No, but Cutcliffe was the top of the list. He turned us down, and then we got Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, there's a lot of ways that this season could be going way worse.
Yeah.
It could be like third-year Rodriguez bad right now.
All right, this is a little political, but it's not about like who's better or worse. It's just like who managed to take the biggest slam dunk in the history of politics and blow it. It's Hillary Clinton. And it's because that she constantly seems like a slightly malfunctioning robot.
Yes.
And it's just like, okay, there's a lot of reasons that, you know, she managed to lose, but, like, I think it all goes back to the fact that she's not actually a person. And not, like, in a bad way, just in a robot way.
Yeah, I could get I get into serious conversations about her, but I choose not to.
Yeah, all right, so that was my number two. Seth, you're number one.
My number one is every person holding an opinion on the internet. That's the...
So we're going to take an L from Rucker. Every person?
We'll take everyone with an opinion. Anyone who's saying, I want to tell the coaches what to do.
Okay.
Who's talking about anything.
So if they were placed in charge of the program, Michigan would take an L from Rutgers is what you're saying.
Yes. Pretty much anyone. If I was in charge of the program, they'd be taking an L from Rutgers
right now. I think there's one caller on TKA, Don from Ann Arbor, who I think could beat Rutgers. But otherwise, I think you're right.
He's a smart guy.
I like Don.
Yeah.
My number one, I wish I had never done this. My number one is Bruce Arena. Because he literally just did that. He figuratively literally just did that.
He lost to Rutgers and Tobago.
That's right. Rutgers and Tobago is who he lost to. People are probably sick of me complaining about U.S. soccer. I have bad news for them. I have very bad news for them. All right, that was our gimmicky top five. We are going to take a break, and we are going to talk about Rutgers itself after we come back from the break. This is not going to be a particularly long segment.
No, I'm sad about Parker.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I, and we all love MGoBlog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGo financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Even though everybody else says it's not so, I think you are the only truth I know. So tell me, am I caught in between disguising?
That's like a one on the rave scale.
That was Comeback Swinging by the A-plus Machines. These guys gave me a three-song sampler in 2002, and now their music is out there.
Okay. also out there is Lantana's Black Bean Hummus with a spicy corn relish topping. I actually have some of this in my fridge right now, and I've been having it on Triscuits. I enjoy it because it tastes good, and also I'm not murdering kittens.
That's true. It's also my second favorite of all their this is the one that I like to keep having.
What's your
festive thing?
What's your favorite?
The carrot.
Carrot?
Yeah.
Really?
That carrot one? The sriracha carrot?
Yeah.
It's ungodly. It's so good. On everything.
On everything.
On everything, with everything. Chips, carrots, put a celery in there.
Would you put the carrot hummus on carrot hummus?
Absolutely. I've done so. Several times.
All right, check out all of Lantana Foods flavors at lantanafoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check out your local grocer. All right, Rutgers.
Rutgers.
Rutgers, the
Michigan offense of the Big Ten.
Ugh. So I'm doing the preview. You did the UFR, and a couple of things leap out to me. One, they're 125th in sack rate. And you saw them like barely ever blitz and rush three a lot, if I'm correct.
Yeah, they do a lot of rushing three, or they rush three and then bring like a late linebacker as a fourth, and it's just useless. They're just having a linebacker run out of coverage essentially, because those guys never get home.
He's probably like spying on a screen or something.
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of times they're just trying to pick their way through. They're small guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've mentioned this a couple of times. Ross Douglas.
Right, yeah.
That Ross Taylor Douglas. You know, the Brady Hoke cornerback / running back.
Is playing linebacker.
Is playing strong side linebacker. And not like, you know, space backer.
He must be playing
space backer. He space backs a little bit, but he's... They're a 4-3 under, so he's Jake Ryan out there.
I'm sorry, I had no response to that.
He's tremendously undersized and gets kicked out hilariously. I think there were five times in the Illinois game alone that they moved him at least 8 yards.
But in like the S&P world, they're a decent run defense.
Yeah, they've got
all their metrics are horrible.
I like their nose tackles a lot. They rotate between a fifth-year senior and a redshirt freshman. The fifth-year senior is like the star of the defense. He's a plugger. He's not. But he'll push the pile. He's strong.
So he's a plugger, and he's the star of the defense.
Oh, he's a stout guy who will get in, he'll push his way into the backfield. He's okay. not going to rip by anybody.
He's basically Brian Monet.
Sort of, yeah. And then they have like a – I kept on going back to Renus because he's like – he's listed at 6'0", and I think he's got to be shorter than that as their backup.
I love tiny nose tackles, like tiny guys who are just – as wide as they are tall.
Yes, exactly. And he looks like a little box when he's going after guys.
So cute.
So cute and so immovable. Anyways, and then they're because they're an under, they have basically, you know, 2, 3, 4 tackles on either side, and they're both 300 pounds. And those guys are committed to making sure that nobody gets the linebackers because the linebackers will fall apart when they get breathed on. And that's they actually got flagged on the very first play of the game for a hold. So I wonder if someone was sending tape of them trying to make sure that nobody gets downfield past them.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why they're stout against the run mostly, is that defensive line is pretty decent.
Their secondary is in progress, I would say. Their best cornerback, I wish H was here for this. Bleswan Austin, is that?
I've been saying Blessin.
Okay.
Yeah. Blessin Austin.
Bleswan. I'm just going to call him Austin Austin. Austin Austin is out for the year.
Awesome Austin.
And the guy who's like kind of come in as the nickelback is the Duncan Robinson of football. he's like a walk-on who transferred from D3 to Rutgers, and now they're putting him on a football field.
Yeah, I went back on him because I wanted to make sure I was correct on this. Every single time he was on the field against Illinois, they picked on him. Like, he gave a completion. I think there were like 5 snaps that he saw, and Illinois got a completion on every single one of them. I can't blame him for one of them.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And then at safety, they're rotating guys, one of whom was their leading receiver last year, right?
Yeah. Well, he was the slot receiver, so he's 5'9".
Right. So, and they moved him to safety.
And he's actually not a problem.
Well, he wasn't a problem against Illinois.
Yeah, he wasn't a problem. Yeah, that's the only 2 games. So after they played Ohio State, they had a bye week, and they kind of moved a lot of people around. So their depth chart is completely wrong now. And that guy, he bumped out Kai Hester, who was a starter for a while.
He was like a 4-star recruit, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think any of them are 4-star recruits, but okay. Hester was for Rutgers, an exciting prospect.
So, I mean, they've managed to hold it together. They're actually really good on passing downs. They're 6th in S&P in that. They're 33rd overall as a pass defense. And you do kind of have to wonder how much of that is the fact that they're playing like Illinois and stuff. But Michigan's offense is not exactly ripping it up.
Yeah, I mean, when they faced anybody with a pulse, they've gotten destroyed, but we're not necessarily an offense with a pulse. So,
I mean, they did a decent job against Washington. That was 30-14, and
it was close in the first quarter. But
Washington had a punt return touchdown, so they only gave up 23 to Washington. So,
yeah, I watched parts of that.
13 to Eastern Michigan in a game they almost lost.
I watched parts of that game, and I was focusing on the linebackers getting blown out and getting Washington. You know, we science circle guys on those diagrams when we think they're problems, and we sign a lot of guys in the past, which is why it doesn't really tell the full story when I sign number 15.
Mm-hmm.
He was responsible for an entire Washington drive, like an 8-play drive where like they're just messing with that guy the entire way. And
who's 15?
Their weak side line, the linebackers are interchangeable, so he'll end up as a middle linebacker or
okay,
weak side
but what's
linebacker.
His name?
He is, I always forget their names because I chart with numbers.
There's a piece of paper there.
I know. It's Trevor Morris.
Trevor Morris, okay.
Trevor Morris is a junior, and yeah. He's we made fun of him last year, too. And
don't make fun of people.
I wouldn't say make fun of people.
We questioned his abilities.
Yes. Anywho, their cornerback, the other cornerback is good, Isaiah Wharton.
Okay.
Yeah, he really good in run support, stayed with his guys. Against Ohio State, he lost a couple balls that cornerbacks are going to lose to.
So, I mean, this feels like to me that Michigan is going to go into this game and be like, we're going to run a bunch of power and hope that, you know, their defensive tackles can't slant very effectively because they're big, slow guys, and do whatever they can just to make those linebackers relevant. And that seems like I'm guessing that that's going to be pretty successful.
Yeah, this would be a great game to bring out some of that Stanford stuff where they would flip the line, flip the strength of the line right before the play and then run.
Okay.
Because the other defensive end, we haven't talked about him yet, is Kamoke.
Oh, right.
Is Ture. I think you called him the Tarzan.
Who plays like Tarzan because Tarzan's never seen a football before in his life.
Yes, and that we said that 3 years ago when he still kind of plays like that.
Yeah. He's tall, but he's also
And he's athletic.
He's 6'5", he's like 250. Not good at keeping leverage.
No, the one thing he can do now is he's fast, and they drop into pass coverage a lot, and then into like a linebacker, right. Outside linebacker spot. But he'll carry a back all the way down the field and stay with him.
And so the other thing that you might hope for, if you are a silly person who hopes for things, is the pressure is such that one, John O'Korn can settle into the game a little bit. And two, this is a game where I think you can play Brandon Peters.
Yeah.
Because they don't really get to the quarterback. And I know that, in the past, Michigan has played teams like Purdue, and it's like, oh, these guys don't get to the quarterback, and they still got to the quarterback. But Rutgers is on another level in that regard.
Yeah, and it's a good opportunity to get that running game. Churning enough, get up by a couple touchdowns, and then Rutgers has to respond to the running game.
Yeah. So on the other side of the ball, Rutgers is going to have the least functional passing game I think Michigan is going to see this season. They've got alternated between three different quarterbacks, and the
not your guy for this. Resigno is what I was saying in my
Resigno?
Head.
Resigno?
That's probably incorrect.
Anyway,
people in Michigan would know. He played him. He was the guy who replaced Shane Morris.
The guy who's not Kyle Bolin, who got benched, came in, and he's averaging 15 passes a game the last two games.
Yeah.
So, and you charted a game where on first down they had 20 runs, two passes, and one play action. One play action.
Yeah,
when you're running 90% of the time.
And they don't even run like a lot of screens or anything, too. They just...
No.
Yeah.
So, Janarian Grant is a guy who is an explosive playmaker. I think he's actually like close to the national record for most return touchdowns in a career.
Yeah.
And he has barely two catches again.
10 is the number he's going for.
So he has like 16 catches this year. And like he's a guy who you can just throw the ball to like without even having him run a route.
Yeah,
and
or
they still can't do that.
Lock in, and this is what they're doing with him. You can lock in on him, and he'll still find space.
I'm just talking about like doing a bunch of dumb screens and seeing what happens. So,
yeah, well, that was their offense last year for four games, and then he got hurt.
And well, he's two touches a game is kind of insanely low for him, especially because they have like one receiver who's like over 6'2", and everybody else is a slot guy.
Yeah, and none of the I didn't. Wanted to start bagging on guys who only get to see three times in a game, but none of the receivers I think are going to have any chance of getting open against Michigan's corners.
I mean, there's always a chance,
none of them are going to be worrying me to the point where that's. So yeah, Grant's the guy that he's going to test Michigan's safeties a little bit, and especially if we're pressure on them.
Like they're at 15 attempts a game. Like this is to be as bad as they are and to be as little used as they are is kind of a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. Well, and they have to be running the ball because Jerry Kill has, like, simplified the hell out of this offense. Mm. So, like, I think I charted 67% of their plays were one of three plays.
Yeah.
So, and one of them is QB power, which is, that old Denard play where the running back flares out.
Well, it's just power where the QB runs.
Well, it's good for them because their running back is a Miami, Miami transfer.
He's like 235. So
he was the number one rated fullback to Rivals. Yeah. So he's fullbackian. But that makes him a good pass protector, and it makes him a decent lead blocker. And I thought he was a pretty good runner, too. He sets up his blocks well.
Such as they are. So their ground game is respectable on S&P Plus, and I don't know how, because all of their peripheral stats are horrible. So they're like 117th in power success rate. They get stuffed almost a quarter of the time, which is like 115th. Like, I mean, Michigan's going to crush this. It's going to look a lot like last year.
They don't give up sacks. Well, that's because they don't pass very often, but
Yeah, and all of their passes are like dink and dunk and dink and dunk and dink and dunk.
Yeah, well, that was the old guy. Yeah, they were Reston, though, they don't even have him doing dink and dunk, really.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily play action, but it's like, okay, it's third down, you have to throw now.
You can never write a bust off or whatever. All weird stuff happens in football, but I think a shutout is a 50-50 proposition here.
Yeah, they will get first downs this time.
I predicted 25-1.
And then I explained in the comments how that's actually possible to happen.
I don't think it is.
Yes, you have to block a kick, block an extra point attempt, bring it back most of the way, fumble on near the opponent's goal line, and then kick it through. You can kick a live ball for a field goal. It's like one of those old 1800s rules that are still around.
All right, well, hopefully that's exactly what happens.
That's the goal.
All right. I mean, there's not much to talk about in terms of Rutgers special teams. They've only attempted 6 field goals. Janarian Grant is obviously very dangerous, and I think that's one of their best shots at scoring is getting a punt return from him. He has a couple of longer turns this year, and he is a dude. But I mean, Michigan's a 24-point favorite, and despite their broken offense, that feels about right.
Yeah, this is a good Karen Higdon 200-yards game again.
Yep. All right, see you guys.
I'd like to thank my lovely sponsors, Underground Printing and the Bow Store. Thanks for having us here. Residence Ann Arbor Downtown, thanks for having us on Sunday. Homeshore Lending, thanks for the MGO Bus Tailgate. Peak Wealth Management, thanks for the tailgate last week. Alumni Association, you guys owe me an ad. Ann Arbor Elder Law, yes, I know how to talk to you. Lantana Hummus, you're delicious. Human Element, thanks for the website. Eco-Intelligent Homes, I'm really glad I called these guys. Michigan Law Guide, I'm really glad I didn't have to call that guy.
Who's got it better than